Hi, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm interested in talking to people who are interested in talking to people who are interested in having a conversation about their future. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. So I'm very excited to welcome my guest today to Recruiting Trailblazers. Krista Tan spent 14 years at Premier Talent Partners and was the head of people and talent operations there most recently before she joined a startup as head of people. Krista is now embarking on a bold new journey of building out a brand new community aimed specifically at women in TA called The Talent Collective. So welcome to the podcast, Krista Tan.
Thank you, Marcus. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm so glad we made this happen.
Indeed. I'm excited to have a conversation with you. I'm excited to hear all about your brand new community and a little bit about your journey as well. Let's just start off just going back a few years, because it wasn't that long ago that you left Premier and you were there for 14 years, right?
Right. Yeah, I was there. I started my career in recruiting there in agency. Didn't necessarily want to be an agency, but that was the only job I could find at the time, 2008, the last recession.
Right.
And it ended up being such a great fit. And I ended up staying there 14 years. So never say never. But really, you know, it came to a point where I was ready to do something new. I was a little bit burnt out on agency life, wanted to go in-house, and so left in early 2022. And then got a role at a Series A startup, tech startup, called Field Guide. I was there for a little over a year and really loved it. I was doing both HR and the talent side there.
So, I mean, at Premier, I know quite a few people who sort of graduated through Premier.
Oh,
I won't
mention
their names right now. But and I think it always had a pretty good reputation. But nobody stays at an agency for 14 years. I mean, they must have been doing something right. What was so good about Premier? And what do you think agencies need to do to retain their people for 14 years?
You know what? There was everything right about it, to be honest with you. And I think some of it was timing. A lot of it was the people. So as I mentioned, I started in 2008. It was the hardest I've ever worked in my life trying to get business back then, brand new to recruiting. So I was learning recruiting as well, right? But really, once the economy started picking up in like late 2009, 2010, 2011, our business just skyrocketed. And so that was the most fun I had ever had in my life. So I was learning a ton. I was making so much money, more money than I ever thought. I was planning on working at a college or university for the rest of my life, you know, a few years before that. So I thought I'd be making 50K for the rest of my life. So, you know, I was making so much more than that, having so much fun working with great people, doing a fulfilling job, you know, all the candidates that are just so, so grateful for you. And I think what was really special about Premier was my CEO really kind of took me under her wing and she developed me and I had great mentorship from her. After about 6 years of being on a desk and leading teams, I then moved over into the operations side. So I was managing all the managers, I was opening new offices, you know, all the leadership, non-IC stuff that you can imagine. And so my career just grew and grew and grew. So I think one of the biggest things that kept me there so long was the fact that I was able to grow and learn so, so much, you know, be supported, make a ton of money, and all with good people. I mean, it was a recipe for success.
I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it? It's you can call culture whatever you like, but culture basically is people.
People.
What are the people like? Yeah. Do people respect each other? Do people trust each other? Do people treat each other extremely well?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what culture is all about. And look, if you started in 2008, that was a rough market. I mean, the end of 2008, going into 2009 with the financial crisis and all that Enron stuff going on, it was pretty crazy. And I think anybody who managed to survive through that period really thrived afterwards, because it was almost like you were at recruitment boot camp there. It was like Navy SEAL style training for recruiters. And if you could somehow just crawl your way through it and make your way out the other side of that absolute hellhole of a time, then you were going to be okay. And to a certain extent, we're in a similar situation now.
Yes,
I mean, things
I agree.
Aren't that great right now. And it appears that there is light at the end of the tunnel. But for the most mm-hmm. part of this year, it's been pretty rough, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, for the last year and a half. And it really was like right when I resigned from Premier, the layoffs were starting. It was like January, February of 2022. It's a mess out there. I mean, people are in crisis mode, you know, desperation, just the lack of opportunity. And so many good people that are really, really skilled right. recruiters cannot find a job to save their lives.
It's unbelievable because for a minute there, we all thought, well, we're more important than software developers now because
right, yes.
you know, salaries were skyrocketing. There was not a single recruiter out of work yes. there for a while.
Yes.
I know that because I was in the market and it was just absolutely crazy.
Yes.
And you're right. You know, now there have been, you know, a ton of layoffs mm-hmm. and a lot of people are struggling to get back to work. And unfortunately, you know, lots of really, really good internal recruiters mm-hmm. who had yes. no business losing their job, you know, mm-hmm. not so many agency recruiters, because I think on the agency side, if you're still a producer, you're probably not going to lose your job. You're less likely to. But on the internal side, you know, if the CFO takes a look at the spreadsheet and says, yeah, we need to cut this many costs, let's start with recruiting, then it doesn't matter how good you are as a recruiter, you're losing your job.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think a lot of the larger companies, the enterprise companies, it was almost like there's no rhyme or reason. You know, it's like they just had to cut a certain percentage of people. And I was talking to a good friend of mine at Google who manages a recruiting team there. And she said she has no idea why the people on her team that got cut. Like if she had been asked, she would not have chosen those people, right? And so like, she's like, based on the metrics, like the highest performers were some of the people that got cut.
Yeah.
So it really
also
has
the highest earners,
wild.
You know?
Yes. Yes. That's
I mean,
true.
It's a financial decision when you're cutting
yes.
an internal department.
It's true.
And I've heard that story that you've just told me before as well, but that's because the people who are making the cuts don't know the people who they're cutting. They're just
exactly.
looking at a number on a spreadsheet
yes.
and saying, right, there's another X amount of dollars to the bottom line. And
right.
They don't really care. So
exactly.
but now we're going to have to rebuild. And hopefully, I mean, when you look into your crystal ball, do you see a slightly rosier future in 2024 for some of the recruiters that have been laid off?
I do. I mean, it's got to go upward from here. I'm already hearing, and you know, some of it could be fall, and fall is usually a busier hiring time anyways, but I'm already hearing people getting recruiting roles. I'm seeing more posted online. I think, of course, we'll always see the November, December slump because of the holidays. But I really think, I was talking to someone earlier today, I really think January, we're going to see just like an explosion. And I also think that we're going to see a lot of companies wanting to hire fractional and contract recruiters instead of full-time, or at least to lead up to figuring out if they need a full-time person.
I totally agree with you. Mind you, I did say this the last time we were entering a sort of a boom cycle, and I was completely wrong because everybody hired full-time recruiters. But I suspect that so many companies have had their fingers burned now and their brand burned as a result of the layoffs of recruiters they've had to make. I think mm-hmm. heading into another sort of up cycle, it makes sense to look at a more fractional or a more flexible workforce when it comes to your recruitment division and hiring recruiters. And you were telling me in our pre-call that, you know, some of your friends have been setting themselves up as fractional recruiters and taking on one or two or three or four clients,
yes.
which sort of distributes the risk, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. On the like employee side or the worker side, you know, if you have one full-time job and you lose that one full-time job, you lose 100% of your income and your livelihood, right? But if you have three or four 10-hour a week clients that you're with and you're recruiting for all of them, if you lose one, not the end of the world. Like, of course you need to backfill that to be able to pay your bills and whatnot, but like you're not losing everything overnight. So I think it's a really smart move for recruiters that have been laid off and have a little bit of an entrepreneurial side to them, have ever wondered like, oh, I wonder what starting my own thing could be like. Fractional, I think, is where it's at. I'm actually working with a friend of mine on creating a fractional course for recruiters. So more on that to come, but I think it's going to be big in the new year.
I think it's a great idea because not only does it distribute risk, but it also offers you a nice blend of things to do. You're not just recruiting for one brand all day, same things, same skill set. And perhaps you can use your skill in helping people set up their overall talent strategy, not just placing people. But if you were to give some advice out, sort of top three tips to people who are thinking, yeah, fractional sounds cool. I could take on 3 or 4 clients. What's the best way to set yourself up? Is it to guarantee delivery or is it to sell yourself by the hour? What's the best way to sort of do that arrangement with a client?
Yeah, a lot of people that do fractional do like the retainer model, right? Where they're like, I will guarantee 10 hours of work a week for, you know, X dollar, and it's a flat amount. Not every company wants to pay a flat amount. So oftentimes you may get a rebuttal of, no, let's pay you hourly, which I think then you decide if you want to do that. You can be as flexible as you want if you're running your own show, right? So, but I think the like one set amount monthly for a certain amount of hours tends to work really well.
What about deliverables though? I mean, if I'm pitching myself to you, and you're the client and you're like, yeah, I've got these 10 recs that I need to fill. What do I need to guarantee? Do I need to guarantee like top of the funnel? I'll put at least 15 or 20 people in the top of the funnel or maybe 10 people each week, or do I need to actually guarantee placements?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that could be a conversation between the company and the fractional person, because I think every company kind of struggles with a different piece of the funnel. So really, what are they looking for? And what do you think you can deliver? I think recruiting in this market is much easier than it was a year ago, just because of there is a lot more talent on the market. So I think that, you know, guaranteeing hires is a good way to go, but it depends on how specialized the role is. I mean, there's just a lot of things that, you know, it would depend on.
This episode of Recruiting Trailblazers is brought to you by Vertical Move. Vertical Move builds world-class digital transformation, product, and software engineering teams by sourcing only the top 5% of passive technical talent. Vertical Move's AI-powered digital skills assessment and paired programming protocols exemplify the most qualified candidates, thus expediting the hiring process and saving customers valuable time and resources. Vertical Move, for technical talent you can trust. Now, what do you think recruiting departments should do in these downturns? Do you think they should lay everybody off, or do you think they should sort of try and refocus as many people as they possibly can in other areas to sort of rebuild their talent strategy, maybe optimize some of the systems? What would your advice be to any leader who was looking for some ideas about how to treat their nascent recruiting team?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I understand at the end of the day, like we were saying earlier, a lot of it comes down to just a number that needs to be cut. However, if your company does have the luxury of keeping, you know, quote unquote, extra recruiting manpower on, there are so many things that recruiters and recruiting teams can provide value in times where it is a little bit slower. And you think about everything that you wish you could do when you didn't have time. It's all of those things which help you to be more proactive, help you to provide a better candidate experience. So, you know, it could be doing talent mapping for executive roles where you know you're going to have a role in 2024 and you're going out and meeting all of the top people in that space, even though the job rec isn't open right now. You're networking.
I love that. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
And especially you can build your brand in the meantime.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You know, interviewer training, that's another one that I think is can oftentimes fall by the wayside. It's either creating one or enhancing the one that you have. I know something that I've struggled with over the last year is the interview plan in and of itself, and really creating like outcomes-based hiring and getting hiring managers to really think about what are the outcomes you want from this role and let's build an interview process around that so we can get better hires.
Right. That's a great tip. I think if they understand their outcomes, then they can sort of reverse engineer the attributes and the skills and experience that they need for people to fulfill those outcomes.
Exactly. And that takes a lot of time. You know, when you have a hiring manager who's like breathing down your neck, like I need to see people this week. You're probably not going to be building out a really thorough interview plan like that, right? You're just trying to execute as quickly as possible. So, I think another thing that I wish I had time to do in my last recruiting role was to shadow different groups, just shadow engineering. So I really understood what they do every day, right? Like it would be really nice to understand a little bit more about the business and a little bit more about what makes a great hire on any given team. So I think these are all things that can make, you know, recruiting teams more strategic and better for the future, right? Because if you cut everybody, you're just losing so much knowledge capital. I've even heard of some of the big tech companies are starting to rehire people they laid off a few months ago. So it's like, if they had just kept them on for a few months, not paid out those crazy severances and had them work on some of these projects, like they would be so far ahead already, right?
I mean, those are all very good ideas. And it just makes no sense to me why these layoffs are so draconian by nature. And it has to be because they just want to put more money on the bottom line and satisfy their shareholders.
Yes.
But you're right. Yes. Then they have to get back to the table and think, how are we going to rebuild this, our talent strategy around new people, train them on all of our tools, and you have to start all over again. And that's not good. One of the things that people have been talking about a lot recently is obviously how AI is going to impact the growth of internal recruiting departments and obviously agency recruiting as well. Well, what are you hearing through your friends about how AI is beginning to sort of infiltrate recruiting?
Yeah, so lots, you know, it's everyone is talking about, just like you said. One, I think, is, you know, how to hire for AI roles. So what is AI and how to recruit for it? I think that's something that the entire profession can learn more about. And it's something that at my new community talent collective, we are going to be focusing on demoing a bunch of tools and really understanding exactly how recruiters can help fill AI roles. I've also heard this concept of we need an AI recruiter, right? And so I think there is going to be just an interesting future with that. Like, how many people are really that specialized in AI yet, because it's so new? So it's a lot of it's about educating ourselves as talent acquisition professionals to become the expert in a, you know, certain given amount of time. And then, you know, just asking the right questions. Like, I think recruiters can be the expert if they're asking the right questions. So partnering with hiring managers to make sure you really understand what they're looking for, and even coming up with those questions with the hiring managers, right? So I think, you know, and then there's also like AI and how we can use AI in recruiting, right? So going back to demoing AI tools, like it can be such an amazing tool to make us more efficient, more productive. I personally don't think it's going to take over our industry by any means, but I think there are a lot of ways that AI can help with a lot of the manual things that we do. So we're going to be doing like demoing a bunch of AI tools and then recommending them to our community, because oftentimes you're getting information that's, you know, very biased, and we don't have any skin in the game. We're not like partners with any of these companies. So we just want to give an unbiased opinion of some of the tools out there, which I'm really excited is something to come.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you sort of zoom out from recruiting, if we can figure out how to use AI in the sourcing process, if we can figure out how to use AI in communicating with candidates process, but without spoiling the personal relationships that need to exist for the whole process to continue, if we can use AI to help interviewing techniques get better, everybody be on the same page or ask different questions or whatever. I mean, I think there's a million different ways. And I think that if you are a recruiter who's looking for a role right now, if you become that specialist,
yes,
and if you take the time, just take the next couple of months to really study how AI is beginning to impact the recruiting process and maybe make up a few of your own and figure out how you can come to the table and talk to leaders and say, have you considered using AI to do this? I think you're going to get a lot of interested people. I think leaders of all types of companies, small, medium, and large, are going to be saying to their recruitment departments, how are we harnessing AI?
Yes.
You know, how are we using it to become better, more optimized, more efficient?
Yeah.
And how are we going to use it to save money? So yeah, I think all of those things are going to happen. So when it comes to the Talent Collective, okay, you mm-hmm. launched this community fairly recently mm-hmm. and it sort of took off quite quickly, didn't it? Can you tell us a little bit about where the whole idea came from and how you started to get this off the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. So for a very, very long time, I've been interested in creating some kind of community for talent acquisition professionals specifically. It just was never the right time. And I'm not one to just go and do something on my own. I'm a very collaborative person. And so I never really had the right people or person to do it with. So earlier this year, this spring, one of my best friends, colleagues, she had had a conversation with a new business connection of hers, and they started talking about a recruiting community for women and wanting to start one. And they pulled me in, thankfully, because this is something that I've been thinking about and wanting to do for so, so long. So in about April, we just started having weekly meetings, talking about what we want the community to be, what kind of like resources and services we want to provide, and doing some of the visioning. And we launched in June. We had a big kickoff event in San Francisco. We had about 70 or 80 women in TA attend that. And right off the bat, we had, I want to say, about 30 members come in. Now it's 3 months later, we have close to 100. So, you know, it's really growing and scaling very quickly. We're just seeing such a need for community and networking and professional development within the community. So it's really exciting and something I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, and I think probably a really good time to launch it as well, because mm-hmm. I think especially with a lot of people out of work, on the internal side, I think people, they need community now more than ever. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's a combination of everyone being more remote now and wanting that community because you don't get a lot of that at home, and what we're experiencing within TA right now with all the layoffs and everything that, you know, it's just a really hard time and people need that support in that community.
Indeed. So what's the mission? I mean, if you were pitching it to me, what would I get out of it? What does it cost?
Yeah, sure. So we essentially...
You're not going to pitch it to me because I'm not a female, but...
of course, yes. But I'm sure you know plenty
but pretend
of
I am.
And yeah. So essentially there's two parts to Talent Collective. So there's the community, the network, you know, those relationships that you're going to build within TA. You can't always talk to your partner or your friend about something at work because they don't necessarily always understand, right? You can't always talk to a coworker because it might be sensitive or, you know, confidential information. So this is a confidential community where people can be vulnerable with each other and help each other with their challenges. And then the second part of that is the professional development and kind of like educational aspect, right? Staying up with the trends in recruiting, getting unbiased opinions, right? So if you go to some big tech conference or a workshop or a webinar, they're usually put on by companies that are trying to sell you something, right? So we're not trying to sell anything tech related. We just want to provide unbiased opinions on what tools that recruiters can be using, but then also other topics like employer branding, just AI in general and how to use AI in your day-to-day. There's a million topics that recruiters just want and need more education on. And, you know, where are you going to get that? So we're creating a community for both of those things. Oh, cost. You mentioned cost. So we actually have two memberships. So we have a remote membership, which has boardroom groups. They're like peer groups that meet monthly. And it's a smaller, more intimate group of women that meet consistently. And then we have at least two workshops a month. So for all of that, and then we have an online tool that has a bunch of like resources, a toolbox, like, you know, chat function and place where all the community comes together. That's $250 a year. You can also pay monthly if you'd like. And then we have for Bay Area specifically, we have an in-person option as well. So that's like the full membership. That's, I believe, $375 a year. And that includes at least one networking event per month. And oftentimes those are bigger, like fireside chat, where you have like four speakers come. We have one coming up in October at the Benchling headquarters. That's going to be a really, really fun event. So we do have that in-person option as well.
What are some of the events that you've got coming up in terms of like professional development or speakers? What have you got your members excited about?
Yeah. So what we just had this week, we had an intro to AI, like foundations of AI. And that speaker is actually going to come back again and do kind of like a round two, like instead of, you know, AI 101, it's AI 102, and really go a little bit deeper. Because so many talent acquisition professionals are job searching right now, I think we're all so used to telling other people how to do it, but it's really hard to take our own advice. And so one of our workshops coming up is about the job search and about how to, as a recruiter, how to do your own job search and take your own advice, essentially, and like, what are some of those key things you need to be doing? So really timely there. We have one workshop coming up that's about like the 10 steps to building a recruiting operation. So it's a little bit more of like a strategic lens. We have another woman coming in and doing kind of more of like a values workshop. So we have a blend of like the hard skills, and then also, you know, things that are a little bit more like just professional development or personal development as well.
And let me ask the tough question, because obviously it's just for women. Would you consider like letting men in eventually, or is it more attractive at this point to women and to join a women-only group?
Yes, I would definitely say yes. When we first, you know, were talking about creating Talent Collective, we went back and forth and back and forth on, do we have men or not? And although we love men and we have nothing against men, we decided to go for an all women's group for a couple of reasons. I think the biggest of those is the, I think, sense of like safety, emotional safety, and people can just be transparent and honest with each other, kind of be vulnerable. I'll give you the perfect example of that. So at our launch event in June, we had a panel discussion, and one of the speakers, one of like the last questions at the on the panel was something about like, what do you regret not doing sooner in your life or your career? And one of the speakers said, you know, I regret not leaving my marriage sooner. And I look at that and I think, wow, how courageous of her and how vulnerable of her. But would she have said that in a room that was men and women? Probably not, right? So I think it is just kind of a safer space when there are mostly, you know, just women there. So that's really where the decision came from. And we've gotten really a lot of good positive feedback about that, that a lot of people are actually really happy that it is just women.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that. You did mention that one of the sessions you were going to be doing is helping recruiters take their own advice and use their skills to get a job for themselves. Before we wrap up here, why don't we just tease that particular What do you call it? Why don't we just tease that particular session and just give us a few highlights of what you think people should be doing right now as recruiters to find their next gig?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, number one is obviously using your network, right? One thing that has really stuck with me over the last year, as a lot of recruiters that I know in my network have reached out to me saying, hey, I'm looking for a job. Do you know of anything? Out of, I mean, probably the close to 50 people that have reached out to me, I've had two people actually ask or offer to hop on a call with me. And those are the people that I remember. You know, like I'm getting pings all day, every day on LinkedIn about, hey, do you know of anything? Hey, do you know of anything? But the people that actually wanted to hop on a call with me and say, hey, like, what are you seeing in the market? Like, how are you? Right? Like, those are the people that I'm going to remember. And so I think, you know, never discounting picking up the phone. I mean, Marcus, this is actually one of the things I loved about you. Like, when I reached out to you, you were like, call me, just give me a call. Let's hop on a call. Like, that personal connection is really what's going to be measurable. One of my favorite professional colleagues, he's a VP of sales at my last company. He would just literally pick up the phone call. And I loved that because it was like, no need to set up a 30-minute call to talk about something that's going to take 5 minutes. And like, let's get this done right now and not have to set up this big call about it, right? Tangent. But
It's funny that that's become a thing. The fact that I just said to you, yeah, here's my number, give me a ring.
Yeah.
I didn't send you a Calendly. I didn't say, yeah, I'm busy till Tuesday next week. I just said, give me a ring. And it's not because I'm not busy. It's just that I know if you call me and I'm on the phone, I'll call you straight back, or I'll text you and say, I'll call you back in 10 minutes.
I mean, we've lost that art of...
Everybody's built up this sort of, this wall around themselves and made themselves so self-important these days. It's like, let's have a conversation in November.
Yes, exactly. It's like ridiculous. This system, like, you can't get into my calendar, right? It's like, call me. I am cool with that, right? So I appreciate that about you. Yes, exactly. So that's just one example, going back to, you know, strategies.
Yeah, I'd like to echo what you're saying here as well, because I think when you've got a network, you can transact that network and just reach out and say, hey, have you got any jobs? Or you can say, hey, it's been a while. Do you mind if we hop on a call and just catch up? And then if you invest a little bit of yourself in your connections, you'll find that that love might just come back and they may invest in you. And I think if you don't put people in awkward positions, and if you say to people, instead of saying to somebody, hey, you know, are you looking right now? Is your company looking? Just said, hey, I wanted to reach out in case you know anybody in the market right now who may be looking for someone with my skill set. Because it's not just who you know, it's who you know knows. If that makes sense.
Right, exactly. Yes, absolutely.
That really counts. Yeah. Then you're turning your network of 5,000 people into an exponential network of 500,000 people, because everybody knows 100 people. So
exactly.
That's good advice. Any other tips?
You know, in recruiting, you have this recruiter's intuition, so to speak, right? When you meet with a candidate, you kind of have this gut check of like, okay, are they going to work out or not? I would say use that recruiter's intuition as you're assessing the company. And I know it's kind of like desperate times right now, and you might just want to jump at taking any job, but I'll give you an example from my job search a year and a half ago. Work-life balance is important to me. Flexibility is important to me. I have 3 young kids, and I was interviewing with a company's co-founders. And one of the co-founders said to me, you know, I really can't fit you in for an interview. I really can't fit you in during the workday. Can you meet with me after hours? And I just responded with my boundary. And I said, you know what? No, like, I have children. I need to be with them after hours. Like, I'll meet with you during the day. Here's my availability. Never heard back from him, which I was actually really grateful for, because it was a preview into how they were going to, the expectations they were going to have of me. And the way that they saw recruiting, right? It was, you don't fit into my day. So, you know, kind of looking at those signs and using your gut.
And what works really for you as well, because I think as a mother of 3 young children, your lifestyle is very different to someone who perhaps, you know, may be, you know, in their second job, and, they're willing to work every weekend and do whatever it takes. And that's okay too. I don't have a problem with companies who require that. It's just, it's not for everybody.
Exactly. And in my earlier days, in my 20s and even like early 30s, I would have jumped at that. No problem. But it's not right for me right now. So I think just, you know, really using that intuition and setting up those boundaries where you know you need them, even in the interview process, I think is really smart.
Do you think it helps? So you apply for a job and then you look up on LinkedIn and you see 784 people have also applied for the same job. Do you think it makes sense to get into that company's LinkedIn company page, find out who works there, and start connecting with people inside that organization?
Of course. Yes. I mean, start connecting with those people. Who do you know that know those people? Like, that should be your number one. I mean, you're not going to get, I'm sorry to say it, but you're probably not going to get a call based on just submitting your resume these days. So that's just an absolute must, what you're talking about, Marcus. I think it's that's what we have to be doing.
I think it's most likely that you're going to get a job right now through somebody you know who can pull a lever that introduces you to the right person. Because yes, if you do sit on a pile of resumes, hundreds and hundreds of resumes, even if you've got a good one, who's even reviewing those resumes? I know companies who are getting hundreds, if not thousands.
Yes.
People are getting hundreds, thousands of resumes, and most of them are going unreviewed. And even if they are being reviewed, they might be being reviewed by someone who's extremely junior and getting like 6 seconds of their time, and they may have incredible bias. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on right now. So
I think you just
have to pull, you've got to pull as many strings as possible, right?
Yes, yes, you're so right. That is a must.
Okie dokie. Well, I really appreciate you, Krista, coming along at such short notice and having a conversation with me on Recruiting Trailblazers. Wishing you all the best of luck with the Talent Collective, this amazing new community for recruiting and TA professionals, only for women at this time, but who knows, we might get lucky down the road. And, you know, let's stay in touch and speak again soon.
Absolutely, Marcus. Thank you for having me. This was such a fun and engaging conversation. And text me anytime. Let's hop on another call.
Beautiful. I love it. Okay. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.